Sorry about the slight delay. So, we're coming up to Pesach. So today's shiur is going to be on Pesach. We have a whole bunch of people here on Zoom and I'm present. One of the things we do before Pesach is we prepare, not only physically by cleaning and making sure we have all the Pesach stuff right ready, but we try and prepare spiritually. I saw an interesting little idea the other day about why we eat the egg on the Pesach table, right? The Pesach Seder. Why do we eat the egg? So many reasons are given, but one of the things I saw was an egg is a very important lesson because the Gemara says that the Gemara says this in a particular place where it's talking about an egg laid on Yontif and if it's Muktzah and if it's a whole business, whole complex discussion. But one of the things the Gemara says in the context of that. Discussion is that any egg that is laid has already been finished and completed the day before. And also, a chicken lays an egg today, it was processed and ready the day before. So they say that's why you eat an egg, to tell us that the Seder is something you can't just fall into the Seder. You have to prepare for it. You have to be permeated with some feeling and knowledge and so that we come to the Seder a bit more prepared so that we connect to the experience, because the Seder, as we know, is a very, very powerful experience. Tremendous Kedusha, tremendous holiness on the Seder night, tremendous power on the Seder night to connect to the concept of going out of our own Mitzrayim, and so on and so forth. So what I'm going to do today is I want to take one little piece of the Haggadah and talk about it, and then through that at the end to give us a bit of a push in terms of what we do with our own experience of Yiddishkeit to become a little bit more free in terms of going out of our own personal Mitzrayim. And it's the section of the Haggadah that talks about the 10 plagues, the Esther Makas. So you want to have a look at your sheet that I gave out. Okay, so let's just go through the plagues themselves so we know who they are. I mean, it's an important part of the Seder. We tell over the story, and part of telling over the story is we tell about the miracles that Hashem did for us in Mitzrayim, and one of those things is the amazing punishment that He gave the Egyptians, that He, not just punishment, but as we learn in a deeper level, that it was actually the dismantling of the infrastructure of Mitzrayim, the impurity of Mitzrayim, which came through the 10 plagues. So what are the 10 plagues? We say, Dom, Tzfardea, right, blood, in number one in your handout. Oh, sorry, I need to share it with the screen here, give me 1 second. Sorry about that. Here we are. So you got number one there. Dom, Tzvardeya, Kinim. So blood, frogs, lice, oroi, wild animals, dever, pestilence, where the animals died. Shin, boils, borod, hail, arbe, locusts, choshech, darkness. And then finally, makas, b'choyres, the plague of the firstborn. Then we have the Haggadah says, the famous idea, Rabbi Yehuda hoya noisen bohem simonim. Rabbi Yehuda created like a mnemonic, a sort of a sign of how to remember the 10 plagues. And it's detzach adash be'achav. So detzach is dom tzvardeh kinim, adash is orev devashchin, and be'achav is borot arbe choshech, and then makas b'choyres. Right? Okay. We'll come back to this in a minute. I just want to go through the whole thing. Now let's read through what happens in the other paragraphs. Let's read through paragraph 3, 4, and 5. I'm not going to read everything. I'm just going to give you the gist of it. So, first of all, we have like this. We have a concept that the Haggadah tells us that what happened in Mitzrayim was the 10 plagues. But then what happened at the Kriyas Yamsuf when the Egyptians pursued us at the sea, they actually got smitten again. And whatever happened in Mitzrayim, they got smitten fivefold. So, so Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, let's have a look. He says, Rabbi Yosef Aglili Oimer, Minayin Ato Oimer, from where do we know? Shaloku Hamitzrim B'Mitzrayim Eser Mako. He said, the Egyptians were smitten with 10 plagues in Egypt. V'alayom Loku Hamishim Makos. And on the sea, by the sea, they were given 50 plagues. Each one was multiplied into 5, right? How do we know this? B'Mitzrayim Mahu Oimer, what does it say when it comes to Egypt? It says, and the magician said to Paroi, after a while when they were outdone and they couldn't do the plagues as was done in Mitzrayim, and they saw this was an act of God, they said to Paroi, you know, this is getting out of hand, And this is obviously from God, and the expression they used was Etzba Elohim Hi. It's the finger of God, right? Not so much the hand of God, the finger of God, right? But then, Valayom Mahu Oimer, what does it say when it comes to Kriyas Yamsuf? It says, Vayar Yisro Lesayod HaGadoyla, right? The Jewish people saw the hand of Hashem, the great hand of Hashem. Asher Oso Hashem B'Mitzrayim, what the Hashem had done to the Egyptians. Vayiru Omes Hashem, and they feared God. Vayaminu B'Hashem, and they believed in Hashem. V'Moshe Avdoi, and in Moshe his servant. Yep. Which therefore we do the maths. Kama Loku Be'etz Ba'eser Makos. How many punishments do they get from the finger of Hashem, so to speak? 10 makos. And mor ma'ata, so we can deduce from there that b'mitzrayim loku 10 makos. In Egypt they were smitten with 10 makos. But la'yom loku 50 makos, and on the sea they were given 50. Because the hand is five times five fingers. So was it. Okay, that was that. Excuse me. Let's go to paragraph 4. Rabbi Eliezer says, "Minayin? How do we know? Shekol mako umako shehevi hakodesh baruchu ala mitzrim b'mitzrayim hoy social arba makos. How do we know that actually in Egypt itself, every plague was actually subdivided into four different plagues? Right? Like some of the farshim explained, there was a plague and they had three derivatives, which I'll give an example of in a minute. But see, that's what it means, right? So actually, each plague was four plagues." Which means they got 40 plagues in Mitzrayim, right? Now, how does he know this? So it's a whole pasuk which he goes through, which I'm not going to go through now. But basically, it's a pasuk in Tehillim that talks about Hashem sending his punishment to Egypt. And it says, "Every ishalach bom charoin apa," Hashem sent his anger. And the anger is four expressions: Evra, Vazam, Tzora, Mishlachas Malachiroin, right? Anger, the fury, whatever, bad angels, etc. Four expressions, right? So the anger was four expressions, which means it was four makos. Go to the last two lines of this paragraph. Emor ma'ato, so therefore you can say from here, that b'mitzrayim loku arboi makos. In Egypt, they got 40 plagues. V'layom loku masai makos. And therefore in the sea, they got 200 plagues. Times five, because again, we know whatever happened in Egypt was etzba, was a finger. Whatever happened by the sea was a hand, so therefore it was five times as much. And finally, we have, it's all part of the Haggadah, this, right? After the Makkos. But this time people are a bit tired and hungry already, but nevertheless, part of the Haggadah, yeah? Rabbi Akiva Oimer, Rabbi Akiva says, "Minayin shekol maka umaka shevi HaKadosh Baruch Hu lamitzvah Mitzrayim, hoyso shel chomesh makos." How do we know that all the plagues were five plagues, not four, five. Each plague in Egypt was actually five. So what does he do? He brings the same pasuk, but the difference is, he counts the first phrase of one. Rabbi Eliezer just looked at the first phrase as a general thing, and he counts the first phrase as one. So there's Charoin Apoy, there's Evro, there's Zam, there's Sorem Ashlach Malacharoin. Okay. So five. He deduces from the same passage, but he says five markers. Therefore, go to the last two lines. Emor Ma'ato, say from here. Mitzrayim Loku Chamishim Markers. Mitzrayim, there were 50 markers. Valayom Loku Chamishim Masayim Markers. And in the sea, there was 250 markers. Okay. I'm going to tell you a few shorter insights first on this, but what I want to get to eventually is to understand the dispute. Basically, I'm not going to so much talk about what happened at Kriyas Yamsuf. For whatever reason, at the sea, they had to get five times as much. Okay, we're going to leave that for today. What I want to really explore is, what's this machlokes between, was there 10 makkos? Was there 40 makkos? Was there 50 makkos? In other words, was each makkah just one? Was each makkah four? Or was each makkah five? It's not just learning it from a pasuk. There must be something deeper that's going on here for us to understand this dispute and also understand the numbers. Is it one? Is it four? Or is it five? And it makes a difference. Which was 200. That's at Yamsuf. Yamsuf was five times as much as Mitzrayim. What I want to focus on is more what happened in Egypt. So in Egypt, we seem to have a dispute here. According to Rabbi Yosef, there were 10 plagues. According to Rabbi Eliezer, there were 10 tapes. Each plague was four, so therefore 40 plagues. And according to Rabbi Akiva, each plague was five. In Mitzrayim. Right? Then each one's opinion needs to be multiplied by five for the sea. But I'm not going to go into that today. So much I'm more going to focus on what happened in Egypt. Okay. So a couple of things that I want to just go through. First of all, before I get to that understanding, I want to just go through, some short insights. First of all, interesting that we have the 10 plagues, and then we have this Rabbi Yehuda giving this the Tzach Adash B'Achav, right? And there's so many Mefarshim, and I'll just show you one or two things because it's really interesting. I mean, yes, people do this all the time. We do it all the time to, we make abbreviations, we make, acronyms, we make signs and hints to remember different things. But we don't normally have like a whole thing that one of the Tanoim made a big deal out of this. Like he created this mnemonic, right? It doesn't need to be, what's the significance of that? And what's the significance of this Tetzach Hadash Ba'achav? Many, many, many Mefarshim have commented on this. But one of the things is based, number one, on a Medrash. The Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, Moshe was in Midian, Moshe Rabbeinu, and he became the leader of the Jewish people. Hashem appointed him. He also discovered a stick, the famous Mateh Moshe, the staff of Moshe. Stick, right? Staff. Which is a whole medrash of how he found it. He found it in the garden, and it was a staff from Gan Eden, and it's a whole story. We find there's a pasuk that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, Kaches Mateh, take the stick, and take with it the inflictions that you're going to bring on Mitzrayim. So there's a medrash. The medrash says, and there's two opinions it looks like, in the medrash. The medrash says that on the stick was engraved the 10 makos, right? But apparently there's a machlok, there's a dispute exactly how the 10 makos were actually divided up on that stick. Some say they were written out completely, like Dam, Tzvardeya, Kinim, Orev, and so on. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, it seems, and according, this is in line with one opinion in the Midrash, it actually did not have the 10 plagues written out on the stick of Moshe Rabbeinu. But what was engraved there was these three words, the Tzach Adash Ba'achav. And in other words, therefore, it's a divinely orchestrated acronym. It's not just we made up something to remember it better. It comes from Hashem, this concept of the Tzach Adash Ba'achav. Now, what's the idea? Why is it actually divided up like that? So there's an interesting Malbim that I saw in a sefer called Yerach Lemoyadim. We know, what was the purpose of the plagues, right? If Hashem wanted to redeem the Jewish people, he was just taking them out. And in fact, Hashem didn't want. Hashem wanted, he hardened Paro's heart, and actually the 9 plagues didn't actually bring about the Exodus. So really only the 10th one did. Right? The 10th one was the final blow. He killed the firstborn. He took us out. He could have done that in the beginning, right? Hashem could have reversed the whole thing. He could have bring Makas Bechoris right away. So, of course, I'll pick a bullet idea is because Noah needed to go through the 10 layers, and we'll see later why this is so relevant to the numbers of the three opinions and so on. But one of the ideas also, and I think the Malbim talks about this, is that we find that the Makas were divided into three groups. Dom, you will see. Like, first of all, you'll see, interesting, right? If you take the Makas, look at the 10 Makas. Dom, Tzvardeya, Kinim. These were all Makas that came from the ground. So it's the water inside the river that turns to blood. It's the Tzvardeya coming out of the river. And it's Kinim turning the particles of dust on the ground into lice, right? Orev Dever Shchin, wild animals, pestilence, and boils are all above the ground. And people or animals. Animals roaming around the ground or people on the ground that get boils, right? Borod Arbe Choshech. We're talking about now three groups of three. Of course, the last one is its own category, is Makas Mechoris. That was the final blow. But Borod Arbe Choshech are all heavenly plagues. Right? So it's the hail coming down from heaven. It's the darkness being turned. Hashem is manipulating the planets, obviously. They're not giving light. The world is filled with darkness. Sorry, Arbe first, locusts, which are flying things. They're coming from the heaven. Hashem sent the wind and these locusts appeared. And then Choshech is darkness, so those are heavenly things, right? What's the idea? The idea behind it is like this, that part of the purpose of the plagues was to reveal Hashem's power. Emunah, right? The whole idea is that Mitzrayim, the Egyptians, denied the presence of God, denied the ability of God, and so on. So therefore, the Malbim says like this, that there were three lessons that Hashem had to send. One was that there is a God, right? There is a God that created the world. The second is that God supervises what happens in the world, Hashgacha Pratis, essentially. And the third is that he's not bound by nature in any way, that he can do whatever he wants. He's a Baal HaYecholes, he's omnipotent and omnipresent, and he can do whatever he chooses to do. And he says these are the three sets of plagues. Damsfardeya Tkinim is about the world itself, that there is a God that created the world. The next ones were on the world, in other words, whatever happens in the world is orchestrated by Hashem, so how the animals function. In other words, there were belief systems, and there are belief systems, that yes, Hashem created the world, but he leaves the world to fate, and he lets the world run on its own, and he left the world, so to speak, right? He created the world, then he says, here's the natural system, run, right? Of course, we know that's not true. Hashem is mashgiach, Hashem supervises everything that happens in the world, and that's the second set of plagues, which is what happens in the world, the animals, the human beings, and so on. And finally, that the world doesn't have to run according to nature. Hashem is a Baal HaYecholes, he can do whatever he wants to do, and what chooses to do, and that's the third set of plagues that come from Shemayim. And that's a bit of the depth. That's Hashem's come from heaven, although it's in heaven, that's Hashem's ability to do whatever he chooses to do. And therefore, that's one of the depths behind the three groups of the Tzach, Adash, Ba'achav, and that's why it's separated that way and categorized that way. Okay? That's one idea. Second of all, I just want to comment on a general thing. Then we have this Machloek to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Rabbi Lezer, and Rabbi Akiva. So on the surface, each one is trying to do the same thing. They're trying to say it wasn't just 10 plagues. There are many, many, many more plagues. So either it's 10 in Mitzrayim and 50 in the sea, or 40 in Mitzrayim and 200. Is this like, they're all doing one thing, expanding the amount of plagues that they were, right? What's the point of that? So the Vilna Gaon says a beautiful thing. The Vilna Gaon says, there's a pasuk later that says, but Hashem promises us that if we do the Torah, that if we adhere to the Torah, there's a pasuk that says, "Kol ha-machalo asher samti b'mitzrayim, asher yodato." Sorry, v'chol madve mitzrayim haroim asher yodato. All the suffering, all the punishments that were inflicted upon the Egyptians that you know about, lo yasim and bach will not affect you, right? So therefore, very simple. If you want to understand the magnitude of the bracha from Hashem if we keep mitzvahs, the way to do that is to understand the immense affliction that happened in Mitzrayim. Right? So the more we understand, the depth and the breadth of the punishments and inflictions that actually happened in Egypt, the more we get to appreciate the tremendous unlimited bracha that happens to us if we will keep the Torah mitzvahs. So therefore he says that where we just thought it was 10 makas, but then we get to know there's 50, there's 200, there's 250. Right? So it's obviously tremendous. So now we understand, we appreciate even more the incredible, incredible bracha that happens to us if we follow in the ways of Hashem. Now, this concept of the makas being subdivided, there is a sefer called Tefillah LeMoshe. Right? It's interesting, we read in our Agada every year, 10 makas, 50, 200, 250, but what actually are these 250 makas, right? We all know the 10 makas. There is a sefer called Tefillah LeMoshe from the Ramak, Rav Moshe Cordoviro, and he actually systematically goes through everyone, he enumerates all these makas. I'm not going to go through it now, for two reasons. First, we don't have time. Second of all, it's not for the faint-hearted. I mean, it's quite gory stuff. But I just wanted to mention one thing, just to give you an example. We say, like, because we all agree that it originates in 10 categories, right? There's still 10 makas. 10 makas is a fundamental part of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But it all depends how extensive it was. So for example, you have the makkah of dam, makkah of blood. So the water turns to blood, right? But the question is, what's the extent of that? So for example, there's all kinds of different things that he talks about. For example, the idea that what happens if a Jew drew water and then gave it to a Mitzri, did that also turn to blood, right? If the Jew and the Mitzri, because they got very thirsty, obviously, and we needed water, right? So there was a time where, actually, it started off with a Jew only having water. If a Jew drew water, it was water that he could give to an Egyptian. Then it started off that the Egyptian would have to pay a lot of money for it. Then it started off that, no, even if a Jew has it, it's water. If he gives it to a Mitzri, it becomes blood. Or even more, that if the Mitzri and the Jew were drinking from the one dish, it was blood and water, right? So there's all these derivatives and components of the makkas that the Rabbi Lezer is talking about, Rabbi Akiva is talking about, and then at the sea it became even much more, and he goes through in detail exactly what happened. Now, before we go into this machlekes, I just want to mention one just random, not random, I'm saying by the way thing in brackets, so to speak. Because when, just because it happens to be in our God, and it's just interesting. In the first paragraph, where Rabbi Yossi Aglili talks about, Rabbi talks about the fact that in the sea it was five times as much, because in the Mitzrayim it was etzba, was a finger, whereas in the sea it was a hand, right? So he quotes that possibly we say every day in davening that I'll just bring it up again. This one, Vayiru Amos Hashem, they feared Hashem. They saw the Yodak, they saw the great hand that happened in against Mitzrayim. They feared Hashem. Vayaminu b'Hashem uv'Moshe avdei. They believed in Hashem and Moshe his servant. So first of all, this is the only time in the entire Haggadah the word Moshe is mentioned. You know that? Right? Which is a famous discussion about how come Moshe Rabbeinu is not mentioned in the entire Haggadah. After all, wasn't he? Right? Wasn't he the one that took us out of Mitzrayim? You'd imagine he's one of the featured heroes, right? He should be mentioned a number of times in Mitzrayim. He's not. He's only mentioned because we happen to quote a pasuk. So we say, Vayaminu b'Hashem Moshe Avdei. So there's many, many reasons for this. One is, well, first of all, Vayaminu b'Hashem Moshe Avdei is an important pasuk. The idea of believing in Hashem, but also believing in tzaddikim and so on. Why is it not mentioned in our Haggadah? So one very cute explanation, that's a famous explanation, is that symbolically, Moshe Rabbeinu is the author of the Haggadah. Now, I say symbolically because actually he's not the author of the Haggadah per se. The Haggadah evolved over time, right? But what does it mean he's the author of the Haggadah? Because the mitzvah of Haggadah is around the mitzvah of the Higadata Levincha. You have to tell your children the story of going out of Egypt, right? What's the context of the pasuk? The context of the pasuk is, Ki yish'olcha bincha, if your son will ask you, it says, why are you doing all this? What happened to you, right? So you'll tell him the story that you experienced, which he didn't, right? Okay. That was the next generation, in a physical level at least. So the famous question is like this, Yidden came out of Mitzrayim. The next Pesach, they had a mitzvah to do the mitzvahs of Pesach. How did they do the mitzvah of the Higadata Levincha? And everyone that was around then, that was at least conscious, was had experienced it themselves, right? So there was no one that could really do the mitzvah of the Higadata Levincha, of saying the Haggadah to your children, except one, Moshe Rabbeinu. Because we know that Moshe Rabbeinu's children weren't at Yetzias Mitzrayim. Famous idea, that when Moshe Rabbeinu came down to Mitzrayim, he was bringing his wife and his children. He met Aaron, Akoyan, and came out to meet him, his brother. After he had been appointed by Hashem to be the leader, Aaron says, why are you coming? So he says, I've been sent by Hashem. Who are these people? My family. He says, we have enough tzaros. Why are you bringing extra? So he sent them back. So they missed the whole thing. They missed the whole Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's a machlokes whether they made it from Matan Torah. There's some opinions that hold they weren't even at Matan Torah. But Yetzias Mitzrayim definitely weren't there. Right? So Moshe Rabbeinu, he was the only one that could be Mekayim, the mitzvah, he could do the mitzvah of Higadata Levincha. Right? So therefore, so to speak, Moshe Rabbeinu is the originator of the Haggadah. So therefore, because he's symbolically the author of the author of the Haggadah, it doesn't make sense that his name should be there. He wrote the Haggadah, he's not going to put his name there. So that's the idea. Okay.
12 months later.
I mean, there might have been some babies born, but I mean, you don't tell Higadata Levincha to 6 months old. There was no one that could understand that hadn't been at Yetzias Mitzrayim. They experienced it themselves. They didn't need to be told. Right? Okay. One final word on this pasuk of Vayaminu b'Hashem Moshe Avdei. I'll just share with you a word from the Tzadok HaKohen. Because many things around this thing about Vayaminu b'Hashem Moshe Avdei, right? He says, why is it so important that the pasuk says they believe in Hashem and in Moshe Rabbeinu? I mean, it goes together, obviously. If you believe in Hashem, you believe in Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem, Moshe gave us the Torah. He says, no. He says, what's Moshe Rabbeinu? What's the uniqueness of Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu was what we call, the Zohar calls him a Roye Neman. He's a faithful shepherd. He's the one who brought the Yidden closer to Hashem, and he's the one that believed in them. That believed in the Yidden. Every time Hashem got upset with us, Moshe Rabbeinu fought for us, right? He says, no, they're going to do tshuva. They're okay, don't do anything to them, and so on and so forth. To the point that when it came to Egel Azov, Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, who wanted to wipe out the Jewish people, he says, if you don't listen to me to forgive them, Mecheinu Masifrecha, wipe me out, I'm not interested. Right? She says, the Tzadok HaKohen says, he was a Chassidish Rebbe, but it's a very personal growth word. He says, Vayaminu b'Hashem, he says, not enough to believe in Hashem, you have to believe in yourself also. What does that mean? Not in an arrogant way, God forbid. You have to believe in your ability to connect to Hashem. In other words, to believe in Hashem is only part one of being successful in serving Hashem. Part two is you have to believe that you can do it. You have to believe that you can serve Hashem. So he says, that's the pshat. Vayaminu b'Hashem, they believed in Hashem. U'b'Moshe Avdo, and also believed in Moshe Rabbeinu. Who was Moshe Rabbeinu? The one that believed in them. They believed Moshe Rabbeinu that they can connect to Hashem. And that's the importance of Vayaminu b'Hashem, u'b'Moshe Avdo. Okay. Okay, now let's go back to this whole machlokes. So, Rabbi Yossi Aglili says that there was 10 plagues. Rabbi Eliezer says each plague was made up of 4. Rabbi Akiva says each plague was made up of 5. What's the machlokes? Let me begin by sharing with you something that the Kolba says, also brought down by the Ritva, and he says the following. I'll give you a bit of an introduction here. The next part is a little bit deep, but we'll take it step by step. We know that Hashem creates something, there's 3 layers of how something exists. So if you take a table, take a human being, take an animal, whatever the case is, right? There's the finished product, meaning the finished product, which we'll refer to as the functional product, right? So a table is a table. When you look at a table, you don't think about the different parts and the components and the elements that go out to create the table. It's a table. What's a table? A table means something that's got a description, a definition. It's a flat surface and it's got a few legs, so it stands up and it's functional, so I can use it, I can put my safer on it, right? That's a table, that's the creation, that's the object. Okay. On a deeper level, we know that it didn't just become a table. But that everything that's created in this world, I'm not even talking about the screws and the bolts, I'm talking about everything, right? Everything actually can be broken down. The Rambam brings in the very beginning of the Rambam, and he talks about the famous Arba Yesoidis, the 4 foundations, the 4 elements that were used by Hashem to create the world. Right? Foundational elements. They are called Esh, Ruach, Mayim, and Ofer. Fire, wind, water, and dust. Right? And we all have those 4 parts. The human being is not, we say, Kima Ofer Ato, we come from the dust. Hashem formed us out. He designed a human being from the clay of the earth. We're not just earth. We're also water. We're not, a lot of us is water, actually. A large part of the human being is water. Part of it is fire, part of it is ruach, whatever the case, right? So everything that's created, actually, if you go a bit deeper beneath the functional surface of what that thing manifests itself in, it's actually, if you want to break it down a bit more, it's the makeup of the thing, the deeper makeup of the thing, which is made up from the 4 different foundational elements that make up the creation of the world, right? Then, the Ramban says that beneath those 4 foundational, so before Hashem created the 4 Yesoidas, the 4 foundations with which He would create the rest of the world, there's something called Koyach Hayuli. Koyach Hayuli means the essence of creation. There's the potential power that Hashem created. Hashem transcends the whole concept of creation. So first Hashem created a foundation which is much more in the potential, much more in the foundational level. It's a power, it's matter of some sort that has the potential to become the 4 elements. Follow me? It's like the essence of creation. The deepest part of creation is the Koyach Hayuli, that potential power from which came the 4 elements. The 4 elements combine in various different ways and they make up the functional product. Is that clear? Okay. Says the Kolba, this is the Machlokes. Machlokes is, when Hashem brought the 10 plagues upon the Jewish people, right? Upon the Egyptians and upon Egypt, the idea was not just to punish the Egyptians, but it was also to inflict a refinement, a harshness, a judgment on the physical land of Egypt with all its concepts in it, because it was so impure. The question is, how deep did those plagues actually go? How deep were those plagues? How deep did they penetrate the infrastructure of Mitzrayim? Rabbi Yossi Haglili holds that it was the functionality of Mitzrayim that was dismantled. Not the actual existence of Mitzrayim. The functionality of Mitzrayim was dismantled. So Hashem dismantled through the 10 plagues the infrastructure, and Mitzrayim came as a functional country, as functional people, as functional animals, as functional rivers and animals and so on and so forth. That functionality became completely dismantled. That's what it did. That's all. Not more than that necessarily. Comes along Rabbi Eliezer and says, no, it was much deeper. The purpose of it was to penetrate a lot deeper than just the surface, just the functionality. It actually didn't just dismantle the functionality, it actually affected and destroyed the very makeup of whatever was created. The makeup of the river, the makeup of the animal, the makeup of the people. In other words, it went deeper than the functionality, it went to the Arba Yesoidos, it went to the four foundations that made up the country called Egypt with all its inhabitants and products. Yeah? That's Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Akiva takes it even a step further. Rabbi Akiva says that actually it penetrated even deeper than the Balaji Sodas. It went all the way down to the very Koyah Hayuli, that potential power that's there as the foundation of the Balaji Sodas. That's how deep the Makkas were, that's how deep the plagues were. It went all the way down to the very, very foundational level, and that's how deep the Makkas penetrated Egypt, and that's why he says each Makkah was actually five levels, five Makkas. So it's one Makkah, that's the functional, that's the finished product. Four Makkas, it goes deeper to the four foundations. Five Makkas, it goes to the very essence of what it is. Okay. What's this got to do? Why? What's the Machloikas? So obviously the Machloikas is how far. Mitzrayim was a place of immorality. Mitzrayim was a place of impurity. It was called Erevas Ha'aretz, right? For the Yidden to leave Mitzrayim, we know that the Yidden to leave Mitzrayim wasn't just a physical journey. It wasn't just a physical geographical exodus. The Yidden to leave Mitzrayim was to escape the impurity of Mitzrayim, right? To escape the impurity of Mitzrayim, Hashem had to destroy Mitzrayim. I mean, what destroy Mitzrayim? Destroy the impurity of Mitzrayim. To destroy the evil of Mitzrayim. To destroy the, what we call in Chassidus, the clipper of Mitzrayim. In other words, that part of Mitzrayim that was the shell hiding Hashem and blocking the revelation of Hashem to take place, that had to be dismantled before the Jews could leave Mitzrayim. It wasn't just to punish them. If Hashem wanted to punish the Egyptians, he could have wiped them off in 2 seconds. It was about breaking through and dismantling the impurity of Mitzrayim. Excuse me. Right? So the machloikas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Akiva is, how deep was the tumah of Mitzrayim? How badly did the impurity of Mitzrayim affect Mitzrayim? Rabbi Yossi holds, it was not necessary to go deeply down to see how deep it could be. It was enough to destroy the impurity of Mitzrayim on the functional level. The country was a functional country. On a functional level, on a behavioral level, it had absorbed an incredible dose of impurity, which needed to be destroyed, so it was destroyed on the functional level. On the level of the Dalad Yesoidus and the four foundational elements, or even on the deepest element called Koyach Hayuli, that wasn't that affected. It didn't need to be dismantled. It was enough to do it on the functional level, and that's why it was only 10 makas. Each makkah only affected the functionality of what was happening. Comes along Rabbi Lezer and says, no. The Tumah of Mitzrayim went very deep. In fact, it affected the very foundational makeup of everything in Mitzrayim, and particularly that even if you take away the finished product the way it is, even if you dismantle the functionality as is on a finished product, and now it's been divided into its original four elements, it's still impure. And therefore, even at the level of four elements, it needs to be punished and elevated and destroyed and dismantled. That's why you had each makkah actually being four makkahs to the depth of the four yesoidus. And then comes Rabbi Akiva, and he says, no, it's actually deeper than that. The tumah of Mitzrayim, the impurity of Mitzrayim was so bad that it actually affected the very, very, which should have remained the purest, but the very, very essence and the potential for the creation of Mitzrayim. That's how deep the tumah was, and it had to be destroyed in this mantle at the very, very deepest level possible, even at the fifth level, which was the Koyach Hayuli, And that's why Rabbi Akiva says it even goes down to the fifth level. Okay? Now, this concept, very fascinating enough, the Baal Shem Tov explained this once in a very beautiful way, actually reflects itself in the halachas of chametz. Right? Now we know that on Pesach we have to experience I only Yetzias Mitzrayim, correct? We know that what blocks us from our own Yetzias Mitzrayim? Chametz. Right? Chametz is forbidden. We have to not have chametz, and we have to connect to matzah, which is humility, selflessness, and then we can go to Mitzrayim. So today, what symbolizes the Mitzrayim? Chametz. Right? Eat chametz on Pesach. That's Mitzrayim. That's the arrogance of Mitzrayim, the evil of Mitzrayim, the struggle of Mitzrayim against Hashem, and so on and so forth. Now, we find a machlokes, we find different views on how prohibited chometz is. So let me give you a bit of background. First of all, like this. You have in the Torah very often, with regard to foods I'm talking about, right? Foods that are prohibited. You have three levels of prohibition. Okay? You have the prohibition against eating something. So many Yisrael, I'll give you an example. So it's forbidden to eat treif. Okay? Treif of meat. It's forbidden to eat it, right? However, it's not forbidden to derive benefit from treif. So for example, if someone gave me a piece of meat and it happened to be treif, there's nothing wrong in giving this piece of meat as a gift to my neighbor who's not Jewish. Even though I derive benefit for it because I create goodwill and I do them a favor, maybe they'll do me a favor later, whatever the case is, it's benefit, but I'm not eating it, so it's okay. I can have benefit from it, but I cannot eat it, right? Now, that doesn't mean I can create a business of treif, because that's a separate thing. The Chachamim actually worried about that, only because they're worried that if I create a business selling treif, I might come to eat treif. But essentially, the prohibition is only eating. The prohibition is not deriving benefit from it. Okay. Then you have certain prohibitions, of which chametz is one of them, that you cannot derive any benefit from it. Right? So, we know that chametz is very strict. You cannot derive any benefit from it. You cannot smell chametz during Pesach. You cannot buy and sell it. You cannot give it as a present, nothing, right? Chametz has an additional prohibition that no other thing has, and that is that you cannot even own it. In other words, like I said, if I own, let's say, you know, you're not allowed to have any benefit from meat and milk, for example, right? Meat and milk is not only prohibited to eat, it's prohibited to have benefit from it. But if I have a can in my cupboard that's got meat and milk and I still own it, there's nothing wrong with that. As long as eventually I have to get rid of it, but because I can't do anything else with it. But I'm not prohibited. I'm not transgressing anything if I own the can. You understand? Chametz is the only prohibition that you're actually not allowed to own. And how do you have to own it? So what do? You have to dispose of it, right? Now, disposing it itself is two opinions how it has to be done. According to halacha, it's enough to throw it into the sea. Flush it down the toilet is a good example, right? Because it's disposed of enough, right? There's an opinion in the Gemara ever that says, no, you actually have to burn it. You have to destroy it completely. Right? And one of the ways to explain that, machlokes, is that the one who says you have to dispose of it is they say because really the prohibition is not to have any benefit from it. But the Torah did is that because it's so strict, the Torah created like a fence for us and says, you know, not only you're not allowed to own it, get rid of it, dispose of it so you won't come to have any benefit. According to the opinion that says, no, you have to burn it, is because no. It's actually not just a thing about not having benefit from it. You actually have to physically destroy it. It's got to be gone, finished. Now, when you have a food, right? When you have a food, this is the part that's a bit technical, but I'll try and explain it as best I can. When you have a food, let's break down those three levels. What's the function of a food? Eating, right? So a piece of bread, its function is to eat it, right? A table is to sit on it, is to put something on it. A food is to eat it, right? The function of a piece of food is not to derive benefit from it. In other words, when I sell something, that's not the purpose of the item. It's just a way that I can get parnassus if I sell you a piece of food, okay? If I give you a gift, that means I get goodwill. But that's nothing to do with the functionality of the food, right? The simple, obvious functionality of the food is to eat it. Okay. When I say that you can't eat something, but you can... Not only can't you eat something, but you can't even have benefit from it, I'm going deeper than its functionality. You realize? I'm saying not only can I not engage with the functionality of the food, but actually I can't even connect with the food itself in any way, deeper than its regular functionality. I can't use it even on a deeper level. I can't go to the actual existence of it and derive benefit from it. Right? Okay, so if I don't do that, that's fine. But the food still exists. So I've stayed away from not only the superficial functionality of the food, I'm staying away even from a deeper level of connection to the food, but the food itself still exists. If I burn the food no longer exists. Yeah? So this machlekes of how it needs to be done is exactly the same machlekes of the how the plagues worked. Okay? What's fascinating is, like this, Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, right? Rabbi Yossi HaGlili is the one lone opinion in the entire Gemara. The Halach's not like him. Rabbi Yossi HaGlili is the one lone opinion in the whole Shas that says that chametz is prohibited to eat, but it's not prohibited to have pleasure from it. You actually can have pleasure from it. Right? Okay, you know what? Oh, no, that's something separate, because you shouldn't come to eat it. But if you go on the street and you see a piece of bread, according to Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, you can feed it to a dog, which is also a form of benefit. Right? Allah is not like that. Rabbi Yossi HaGlili says, no, chametz is only the isra. The prohibition of chametz doesn't affect the chametz itself. It only affects the functionality. Similar to the impurity of Mitzrayim. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, who says that there was only 10 plagues in Mitzrayim, is consistent with Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, who says you're allowed to derive benefit from chametz. Because the issue, the prohibition, which the prohibition of a food, by the way, has to do with the impurity of the food, hasn't affected that deep. It's only affected the functionality of the food. The food as it is a finished product, which is to eat. And that's why there were only 10 plagues, and that's why you're allowed to have benefit from food. Comes along Rabbi Eliezer and says, no. Rabbi Eliezer says that the makkah, that each one of the makkahs was subdivided into four, because the tumah, the impurity of Mitzrayim, was deeper than its superficial functionality in the finished product. The impurity of Mitzrayim actually went deeper and affected how you would dismantle the product in its essential four foundational elements. That's why the makkah had to go deep as well. The makkah had to dismantle the four elements of the thing, not just its superficial finished product. Right? And that's why that's connected to the opinion that says, no, chametz is asur ba'na. Chametz, you're not even have benefit. Not only can't you eat chametz, but you can't even have benefit from chametz. But we would also connect Rabbi Eliezer's to the opinion that when you're not allowed to own the chametz and you have to get rid of it, it's more about disposing of it, not destroying it. Because if you throw chametz into the sea, it dismantles, it's no longer functional, but it exists, right? You're just disposing of it, that's all. So you shouldn't come to eat it, but it still exists. Comes along Rabbi Akiva and says, no, the makkah was very deep. The makkah went much deeper than that. The tumah, the impurity of Mitzrayim, went all the way to the koyach hayuli, to the potential, to the pre-four foundational level, to the very essence of the level, right? And that's why you can't eat it. That's why it had to be five makkahs, number one. That's why you can't eat it. That's why you can't derive benefit from it. And Rabbi Akiva's view would be connected to a view of Rabbi Huda in the Gemara, which is you have to burn it. You have to completely destroy it. It's got to go. Right? That's this thing. Okay. That's a nice word. What does it all have to do with us? What does it mean to experience Yetzias Mitzrayim on these four levels? So he says like this. One way of serving Hashem is behaviorally. So we do the mitzvahs, right? That's the functionality of serving Hashem. We light Shabbos candles, we put on tefillin, we give tzedakah, we stay away from the things we shouldn't do, all on a behavioral level. Okay. That's one level of serving Hashem. Then, there's a deeper level of serving Hashem, which is divided into four. The functional, right? Behavior, thought, speech, action. Our emotions, our cognition, the way we think, learn, absorb, understand, and real conviction, real commitment, emunah, and real serious nefesh, like going the extra mile, right? That's it. Which, by the way, is connected to four levels of the neshama: nefesh, ruach, neshama, and chaya, right? So it's really now. Then we also have the deepest level of the person, which we always talk about, we've talked about it many, many times, the yechida, the very foundation of the neshama, which is the pintalayid, the fifth level, which normally we say can never be affected anyways, it's so pure and it's so there. Okay. So there's three ways of experiencing Yetzias Mitzrayim on Pesach. One way is a person to say, listen, I need to go out of Mitzrayim because my behavior is not correct, it's not enough, I need to grow. I need to do another mitzvah. I need to learn more, whatever. I need to behave better. So it's Yetzias Mitzrayim on a functional level, right? That's a great level. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says that's really what Yetzias Mitzrayim is all about. The tumah of Mitzrayim affected the functionality of Mitzrayim, therefore your Yetzias Mitzrayim also has to be growth on a functional level, and that's one very legitimate level of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Comes along Rabbi Eliezer and says, no, it's not good enough. Right, we're reading this in Haggadah, right? The idea is that when we read the Haggadah, the idea is to experience this. So what's the reflection? What's the, for want of a better word, what's the meditation that we have to think about when we come to these three opinions in the Haggadah? We're just telling stories, or we're trying to think about how we're going to do it, right? So when we read the paragraph of Reis Aglili, it's reminding us that we need to at least go out of Mitzrayim on a functional level. Part one, right? Improve our behavior, improve what we're doing. Comes along Rabbi Lez and says that no, it's not enough. Because maybe you will improve on your behavior. But your four yesodos, the four elements of your whole service of Hashem is still going to be Mitzrayim. You might not be there in your mind. You might be doing the right thing, but you're not with Hashem with every part of you. You're not with Hashem in your mind. Your mind is still trapped. Your emotions are still trapped. Your enthusiasm, your focus is somewhere else. You're certainly not going to go the mysterious nefesh, but you're not, all these things are still in Mitzrayim. Therefore, Rabbi Lezer says, no, the Makkah is four levels. And therefore, the Chametz is forbidden with Hanah, it's forbidden with pleasure because it goes deeper than that. And therefore, your own Yetzias Mitzrayim also has to be like that. When you go to Mitzrayim on Pesach, it's not enough just to improve behaviorally, you have to improve at all levels. Our learning has to improve, our emotion has to improve, our davening, our excitement, our commitment, our convictions, all of those things have to go in Mitzrayim. Because they can all be affected by being in Mitzrayim. If you're a trapped person, if you're in your own spiritual Mitzrayim, it's not just your behavior that's affected. It's deeper than that that's affected. A lot of us is affected. However, Rabbi Eliezer, as he says over here in this talk, Eliezer was an incredibly spiritual person, and he was called Rabbi Eliezer Ben Hurkanus, and he was a son of a great person, and he came from purity, and he came from all this. So although he said that you have to go out of Mitzrayim on all four levels, but he wasn't worried about the fifth level. He says the fifth level is always intact. That's not a problem. Which is how we normally view things. We always say the fifth level is always intact, can never be affected. Comes along Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, not entirely true. It's a chiddush, this, right? Not entirely true. Why? Because Rabbi Akiva knows how it is to be really trapped. Who was Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva was a ger. Rabbi Akiva came from the world of impurity. He came from a foreign world. Right? A foreign world where maybe the fifth level is still intact, but it's still trapped and it's still affected. Right? You can't change the fifth level. The fifth level is always pure, but it can be affected. It can lack expression. Right? Even the very essence of a person can be affected on a very, very deep subconscious level. So if Rabbi Akiva, and it's not for Rabbi Akiva, he says, no, fifth level. You've got to go the fifth level as well. You got to Pesach. You got to be intact with your fifth level, your yichidus shem nefesh, your deepest part of who you are, because that could also be effect on Mitzrayim. Maybe on some subtle level, you're still in Mitzrayim. You got to make sure you got to Mitzrayim on all levels. You got to release. You got to redeem every single part of your neshama, even the fifth level, because it could be even the fifth level. Like we know of this famous Gemara, where Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, right before he left this world, he was crying, and his talmidim said, "Why?" He said, "I don't know where I'm being led to." They say, "What do you mean? You don't know me led to you?" Of course, you're going to Gan Eden, right? So in Chassidus, there's a long explanation that explains Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knew he was a tzaddik, he knew he was a great person, but he felt maybe on some subtle level, at the depth of his neshama, maybe he's not fully connected. Maybe he's a bit trapped. So when it comes Pesach, by the way, this relates also to the four cups and then the fifth cup of Eliyahu HaNavi, right? So the four cups also, the four levels of a person. But then there's the fifth cup even. Fifth cup, which is the highest cup, the Pintaliyid, the Yechidus Shem HaNefesh, and even that has to go on the Seder table. Because even that we have to go on Mitzrayim. So when it comes our Gadol Shel Pesach, when it comes to Pesach night, it's not only what we have to do, it's also what we're given the power to do. The Kedusha, the holiness of the Seder night is tremendous. And it's tremendous because it gives us the power to somehow go to Mitzrayim on all levels. Rabbi Yossi's level, the functional level, behavior. Rabbi Eliezer's level, every part of us, seichel, our emotion, our cognition, our conviction, and so on and so forth. And even Rabbi Akiva's level, Rav Chas V'Sholem, even something at the very essence of who we are is trapped, it could also go to Mitzrayim. And that's the depth of these three paragraphs of how the Makkos played out in Mitzrayim and how it's relevant to our Yetzias Mitzrayim. All right, we'll stop there. I'm sure everyone, there's still some more shirim. There's still more shirim this week. Please look at the posters and everything. And happy preparation for Pesach, and it should be a meaningful Pesach and a real Yetzias Mitzrayim experience.